everyone. You're welcome to another exciting edition of Breakout with BD on the BBS Radio Station 1. My name is Bidemi Nelson, or simply call me BD. I'm glad to be back, and I hope your week was great. Mine was, and I really want to thank those of you that contacted me in the week. I apologize for the quality of the show last week. I can assure you that it will only get better. Without much ado, I would like us to get on with the business of the day. So fasten your seatbelts as we prepare to take off into another eye-opener I call Culture and Child Abuse. As you know, this is a live show, and I encourage you to call in and share your opinions, comments, or questions. The lines are open, and you can call into the program through these numbers, 888-815-9756. This number is a toll-free number for people in US and Canada. We have direct lines also you can call into. The first line is 530-327-7602. The second line is 530-413-4510. The third line is 530-413-4522. I'd like us to talk about culture and abuse, like I said earlier. And before we go any further, it's important we understand the meaning of culture and the meaning of abuse. And when I talk about abuse, you all know I'm talking about child abuse. But let's say culture. I checked the definition of culture in the dictionary, and I found that it means any behavior that is peculiar to human beings. It also means the beliefs, customs, practices, and social behavior of a particular people. Comprehensively, culture can be a combination of languages, ideas, beliefs, customs, codes, institutions, tools, techniques, works of art, rituals, ceremonies, and the list is endless. A combination of these will give you a comprehensive detail of what culture is all about. And then when we talk about child abuse, we are looking at acts that are perpetrated against the child that violates his or her rights and restricts or inhibits his physical, mental, social, and spiritual growth and development. That said, I'd like us to consider the major cultures in the world. Initially, I thought I have like a million of them, but when I checked on it, I found that we had 8 major world cultures, and I'll just run through all of them. We have the African culture, we have the Anglo-American culture, we have the Asian culture, the European culture, the Latin American culture, the Arab and Middle East culture, the Oceania or Australian culture, and the Arctic culture. We'll hit it off with the African culture, and I checked out some of the things they do in the cultures over there, and I related it to child abuse. We're going to look at the first one, which is first child marriage. First, F-O-R-C-E-D, first child marriage. Now, this is very peculiar in Africa. And in first child marriages, it's the responsibility of the father when the girl child has not attained puberty. The father gives the girl out to a person of his choice, usually with or without the consent of the mother. In some cultures in Nigeria, for instance, the Tiv culture, early marriage is practiced where the girl is treated as a parcel or commodity to be exchanged in an exchanged or forced marriage, as the case may seem in the Tiv culture here. A male family member trades his sister or a female ward for another girl in another family who then becomes his wife. Sometimes, girls are exchanged to senile, ugly, diseased, or even disabled old men. We look at the Maasai culture. This is in Kenya. Here, a girl is circumcised when she's about 12 years, and upon circumcision, she is considered matured and she's married off. So you can imagine when a girl is married off as early as 12 years of age. And in some part of Nigeria, I'm coming back home again, in the Hausa land, we have a name called Kunya, K-U-N-Y-A, which simply means modesty or shyness. And now Kunya is supposed to instill timidity in the girl and make her shy and obedient. With this in place, they are usually married off by force to an older man without question. So much for first child marriages. Now, how does this become abuse? We look at the first abuse that comes out of this kind of culture, and that is the abuse through early marriages. A child is not equipped emotionally, sexually, physically to pull off a successful marriage. So an early marriage and involving a child is certainly going to fail. We don't expect it to work. We also look at some of the rights it violates. Basically, early marriages violates the right to participation, expression, information, the best interest of the child, and even the right to non-discrimination. I talked about this last week. These are some of the basic rights of children contained in the Convention of the Rights of the Child. Now, the child does not have any rights to participate in the decision-making process of deciding who she's going to be married off to. She can't express her opinions about the man she's going to be married off to. She can't get information as to his data. Is he tall? Is he short? Is he wealthy? What is the health of his family like? She has no idea. Usually, these marriages violate the best interest of the child because apparently they don't consider that when they are marrying off the child to an older person. And then we look at non-discrimination. This is a right that is strongly violated in first child marriages because it's usually gender discrimination. Little boys are not forced into marriages. It's the little girls who are forced into marriages. It also violates the right of the child to choose who she wants to be married to. It violates her right to protection from abuse and exploitation. The reason is apparent because the older men rape these children or sexually assault them after marriage. This is a form of abuse we call sexual abuse. Sometimes these older men can incise, cut, or puncture the genitalia of the girl to allow for penetration in intercourse using sharp objects like blades, knives. It's terrible. This is called marital rape. Sadly, Africa's legal system is yet to consider or recognize this barbaric act. Sometimes these marriages take place between 12 and 13 year olds in large towns. But when you go to some rural areas in places where they are not so enlightened, the girl can be given to a boy or can be married off to a boy or a man as early as 5 or 6 years of age. It's believed that the girl goes to the husband's house to be brought up and generally to be taken care of by the man. The husband does not have sexual relations with her till he considers her ready and usually not below 12 years of age. I remember a very touching story somebody shared with me a fortnight ago about a place in Nigeria, in southern Nigeria, where she saw some little kids going to school, and she saw this girl with the face covered. And this woman who was giving this story exclaimed and felt pity for the girl. And what she said was, well, what a pity. This little girl has been married off so early in life. She's been married off so early in life. She was probably 6 or 7 years of age. So much for early first marriages involving children. Now, like I said, culture is really deep and strong, and usually they are supported by myths. Now, we're going to look at some of the myths that support early marriages. And the first myth that supports early marriage is the risk of premarital sex at puberty. Now, they believe that if the child is married off quickly, the risk of premarital sex at puberty is taken care of. I wonder what you think, but I'm thinking opposite right now. Now, the second myth is that the celebration of a preserved virginity is usually rewarded and honored. Well, in some parts of Africa, when a man is, if he's successful enough to marry a virgin, the virgin is rewarded and honored. And as a result of this, parents would like to get that reward and honor and would want to marry off their children who obviously are still virgins to get that reward and honor. Now, parents of the bride are rewarded, the virgin is cherished by the husband and the husband's family. In other cases, there is a celebration party following consummation of marriage if the bride is still a virgin. Well, the reality of this is that in many cases, these girls suffer from VBF, which is a form of disease affecting women that give birth very early in life. It affects the private parts and some of the female reproductive organs. It makes them loose. They are no longer firm. And then you find them losing grip over passing of waste and all of that. It's a serious health condition that threatens their lives. It's sad. Now let's check out other myths that promote early marriages, and that is, a bride who is a child idolizes the husband and becomes more firmly attached to him as she grows older. Well, that's a myth that they believe would help promote the success of the marriage, and that's why they keep saying, let's marry up the children early in life. So they believe the child would idolize the husband and will be so in love with him, will be so attached to him as she grows older. But the reality is, many of these brides hate their chosen husbands and even attempt killing them and running away. Some other myths include, at a young age, the child has not reached the period of defiance and would accept the father's choice as good and wise and matured. Well, what do you expect the child to do? At a young age, an adolescent is likely to be influenced by looks and affluence, which may be rash. The earlier, the better to marry them off then. That is another myth that influences early first child marriages. So they believe at a young age, the adolescent she won't be moved by the looks of the man or by his wealth, his affluence, and all of that. So let's marry up the child before she gets wiser. Another myth is, having sexual relations with a young child and a virgin at that re-energizes the men and maybe can cure sexual transmitted diseases. I bet you are laughing wherever you are, but I tell you, these things are happening all over in Africa and is something that needs to be stopped. First child marriages. Now, I always put the blame back at the parents, because usually it's greedy parents that marry off their daughters for mercenary purposes or royalties because they are looking at gains of money and prestige. Please, for God's sakes, let's create more awareness about early first child marriages. It's wrong, it's barbaric, it's cruel, it's unhealthy for the children. Well, I told you the show is live. You can call in to share your comments, opinion, ask me questions, share your concerns with me. I'll run through the numbers again. The toll-free number for those of us in the United States and Canada is 888-815-9756. The direct lines you can call to if you are not in USA or Canada is 530-327-7602. That is direct line 1. The second line is 530-413-4510. And the third line is 530-413-4522. Wow, I feel my heart reaches out to many of these children who have been forced into early marriages. And like I said, it's our responsibility to be a part of the change that is fair, to be a part of the much needed change that will make the world a safer and healthier place for our children. And I'd like us to move on to the next form of abuse, which is also prevalent in Africa. And this abuse is called the female genital mutilation. The female genital mutilation. I remember when I was in the secondary school, I saw a video about the female genital mutilation that some NGOs came around to my school and played for us then. And when I saw it, I was dumbfounded. I was shocked. I felt an inner rage within me. I couldn't believe this could happen to anybody, but it does happen. and it happens a lot in Africa. I would like us to look at the types of female genital mutilations that exist, but basically, this act is used to determine the femininity or the courage of a woman. Now, it's ritualistic, and it's the cutting of the whole or part of the female sexual organ. We have three types of the female genital mutilation. The first type, we call it clitoridectomy, and this is basically the partial or total cutting of the clitoris, which is the female sexual organ. The second one we call excision, E-X-C-I-S-I-O-N, and this is the removal of both the clitoris and the inner lips of the female genitalia. Now, the third one, we call it infibulation. And now, infibulation is a more severe form of female genital mutilation because it is the removal of the clitoris, then some or all of the labia minora, and also incisions into the labia majora to create a raw surface. Now, the raw surface is stitched together or kept in contact till the skin heals and becomes an obstructive hood over the urethra and most of the vagina. It's really sad, but these are some of the gory things some women in Africa go through as a result of their cultures. Now, some of the hard nuts that you will find hard to swallow, I'm gonna tell it to you right now, is that female genital mutilation is commonly practiced across all social classes and backgrounds. Today, even with increased awareness, some parents are faced with stiff opposition and usually become powerless in the face of cultural pressure. So sometimes it's not that the awareness is not there, but you know, the power of culture, you guys can't imagine. But I tell you, in the face of stiff opposition and cultural pressure, these parents bow and allow their children to go through the female genital mutilation. Another reason why this procedure is prevalent is because women who are supposed to be the ones saying no to this barbaric thing are usually the perpetrators, and they are its strongest supporters. Interestingly, it is usually the mother-in-law, the grandmother, the aunties, and even the mothers that take this initiative to have the procedure done on their daughters. I'm wondering what you're thinking, but I don't think it's cool. Now, the third thing is that the procedure is done in the most unhealthy environment with the same instruments used for several girls. I'm sure you can imagine the risk involved. We have risk of tetanus infection, HIV or AIDS, extensive hemorrhaging. Oh my goodness, the list is endless. You won't believe it, in countries like Burkina Faso, excision takes place after harvest and is followed by music, dancing, and feasting. Sometimes mutilation takes place on the day of marriage. How do you expect the bride to feel on that day? I'm sure it would be like hell. Another thing, or another reason why this act has remained prevalent is because in some cultures, the female genital mutilation is done before the marriage, so they believe it's safer, you can save the girl some pains. In some other cultures, it is done during the first pregnancy of the woman. And I told you, this is a culture that is celebrated. There's so much frenzy in the air about it. So you find loud drumming, singing, dancing, shouting, in fact, and all of these things drowns the cries of the circumcised women. If any of you can go onto the internet and try and check out to see the videos of what female genital mutilation is all about, I'm sure you will know the kind of pain and agony these women or young girls go through. Now, this celebration, the drumming, the singing, the dancing, and all of that drowns the cries of these women, and the whole painful procedure continues. Young girls are usually indoctrinated about female genital mutilation very, very early in life. And they do this through songs and dances designed to have the messages sink into the hearts of these young girls. So they believe, if I don't go through the process, and probably I'm not a woman. So they have been indoctrinated very early in life about it. And that is where you have passing of wrong information. Because when you pass the wrong information, the consequences are severe. Now, in places like Kenya, there's a saying that the uncircumcised girl is like a rotting carcass in the middle of the house, but the circumcised one is a rose flower in the desert. So you can imagine, if you refuse to go through the female genital mutilation, there's a belief that, oh, she's a rotten smelling, carcass in the house. I don't want to have anything to do with her. It demoralizes the young girls that decide to stand up and say, we don't want this procedure done on us. With time, there's this saying that goes this way, that if you can't beat it, you better join it. So what do you expect? That's another reason why female genital mutilation has remained prevalent. Now, we look at other reasons, and that's very few African countries criminalize female genital mutilations, and this is another reason why it has continued unabated. Now, when countries and people that perpetrate it don't see it as a criminal offense, it continues. So when it can't be sanctioned, it's not wrong, why not if not? And that's another reason why this act has gone on unchecked. Now, statistics shows that in some countries, female genital mutilation is really high. For instance, in Ethiopia, 90% of girls go through this process. In Nigeria, 60% of girls go through it. In Ghana, 30% of girls go through it. In Tanzania, 10% of girls go through it. It's sad, I tell you. How does female genital mutilation become an abuse? The first thing is it violates the right to the best interest of the child. There is nothing in the best interest of a child by cutting off her flesh, taking away her future, taking away her life, taking away the joy, the things she can enjoy later as an adult, tearing it apart, tearing off her skin. There is nothing in the best interest of that child in doing such a thing to that girl. The second way it becomes an abuse is that it violates the rights to survival, to life, and to development. And like I said earlier, this procedure is done in very unhealthy environments. Sometimes they use the same instruments on several girls. And you have the prevalence of diseases, infections. There is no healthcare facility around that can give you quality services that can help check infections or things like hemorrhaging or complications that may arise as a result of this procedure. So sometimes some of these girls may actually die as a result of bleeding to death. Now, another way it becomes abusive is because it violates the rights to participation, expression, and thought. The girls involved they don't have any right to participate in deciding, okay, I don't want to be a part of this, or I want to be a part of it. They can't even express their feelings because they believe it's a taboo to say you don't want that procedure done on you. And you don't have the freedom of thought because you have been indoctrinated early in life about it. So what do we do? It's a very strong culture and very abusive at that. Now, another reason it becomes an abuse is because it violates the right to health and bodily integrity. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. A girl who already has her body violated, God, what is left for her to make use of? Wow. It's time for us to stop this barbaric act. Female genital mutilation must stop, and must stop completely. And I think that the following solutions should be preferred to get this procedure, to get this process out and out of Africa for good. And I think the first thing is that the government must be involved. The government must show a stronger will to kick out this process, while non-government organizations must be more vigilant and increase campaigns against female genital mutilation. Also, there should be increased focus on the prevention of female genital mutilation instead of the punitive measures to offenders. So we are looking at, okay, fine, if we're not going to prosecute offenders, what should we do? What other things can we do to prevent female genital mutilation? We can create awareness about it. We can discourage it. We can give incentives to people that say no to it. I believe these things can help check the prevalence of female genital mutilation. Well, I think we should go on a short break now so that all I've said can really sink in. You can think about it. And I really expect to hear from you soon. It's a live show. You can call in, like I said earlier. Let's get talking. Let's see what we can make out of today's topic and how it can make a difference in our world today. Let's go on a short break. I'll be right back. Now, if you're just joining us, you're welcome to Breakout with BD on the BBS Radio Station 1. Before we continue, I told you last week that the purpose of this show is to break the cycle of child abuse and encourage victims and non-victims to speak up about abusive situations they have knowledge about. If you have any concern, question, opinion, comment, or stories, feel free to share it. You need a voice? You got one now. And back to our discussion. We are looking at culture and abuse. We've looked at forced early child marriages. We've checked female genital mutilation. We'll be looking at another form of abuse, which is something that is really prevalent around the world. This is not just in Africa. And we are looking at culture and child labor. Now, child labor is a big deal of problems in the world today. Child labor basically is the work that is done by children under 15 years of age, sometimes 14 years of age in some developing countries, which restricts or damages the child's physical, emotional, intellectual, social, or spiritual growth. Sometimes work does not harm children, but helps them learn new skills and develop a sense of responsibility. But the difference between child labor and work, let me say good work, is that child labor is actually labor, which is intolerable and harmful to the child. And that which denies the child the ability to develop, play, or go to school. Now, how do you know child labor when you see one? It's child labor when it involves children under the age of 15 years. So when you see children working, and they are probably below the age of 15, that's child labor. Another characteristic of child labor is long hours of work on a regular or full-time basis. Another characteristic of child labor is the abusive treatment to the children by their employers. And when we say abusive treatment by employers, we are looking at physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. The list is endless. Now, another characteristic of child labor is the lack of access or poor access to education. So a child who is supposed to be in school is working or probably goes to school but does not stay long enough in school to get quality education, and he's back to work. So these are the characteristics of child labor. So when you see these things, you know that, wow, this is child labor. and I should do something to check it or I report it. Now, there's another aspect of child labor that I'm going to talk about on the show today, and it's called bonded labor. Bonded labor. Now, bonded labor comes under three, there are three types of bonded labor. The first type is when a child inherits a debt carried by his or her parents. So we have the parents who have incurred a debt before, and the child comes along and inherits that debt, begins to work to pay back the debt of the parents. Now, the second form of bonded labor is when a child is used as collateral for a loan. My goodness, children are human beings, not commodities for sale or to be used as collaterals for loans, for God's sakes. You have parents who go borrow money and need to provide collateral, and they tell you, we're going to give you our kids. That's barbaric. That's wrong. That's very unfair. And that's the second form of bonded labor. Now, the third form of bonded labor is when a child enters into bondage to their employers. And this is usually done when the child requests for an advance on the future wage he or she expects to earn. He requests for an advance on the wage he expects to earn. Now, in bonded labor, the debt is increased consistently through interest to a sum beyond the capacity that the worker can repay. Now, if you look at the accumulation of expense and interest, this basically consumes all the wages that this child can earn and also cause the debt to grow. Eventually, the child becomes the property of the debt collector or the employer. This is a very serious form of child labor. And we have children being treated as commodities for sale, commodities, collateral for loans and all of that. That this is grossly wrong and it should stop. Now, what's the correlation of child abuse and culture? Now, culture comes into child abuse because culture encourages children to work to develop skills. So if you're going to be bringing in culture into it, you'd be saying, okay, fine, we want this student to develop skills, and that's why we are moving them to go and work. But is that really the case? And then second, culture will say children are assets for income generation in times of poverty. There's this adage that in from where I come from that says the more children you have, the wealthier you are, because they are sources of income for you. Now, another correlation of child labor and culture is that these children, they have a duty to assist their parents. Now, they call this duty training. But really, is child labor really training? Is training your child synonymous to child labor? I think it's not. I think they are two different things. We'll be looking at the consequences of child labor on children today, and we'll check the first consequence, which includes child injuries. Child injuries. These injuries could come in form of cuts, lacerations, burns, fractures, fatigue. The list is endless. And I'm sure you know the source of these injuries to the child. It's usually as a result of the abusive attitude of the employer to the child, or the unfavorable working condition the child finds him or herself. The second consequence of child labor is sexual abuse and exploitation by adults, leading to diseases like HIV or AIDS, early or unwanted pregnancies, abortion, drug abuse, alcoholism. What is this world turning into? I wonder. Now, the third consequence of child labor is the physical abuse by employers to the children. And this physical abuse takes the form of corporal punishment. So probably the child is not doing something right. You go all out, take it out on the child, physically abuse him, assault him, brutalize him, and all of that. That's the physical abuse. And that's what leads to the child injuries I mentioned earlier. Now, the other consequence of child labor, the fourth consequence of child labor, is the emotional maltreatment of the child. And this comes in various forms, like blaming the child, belittling the child, verbally attacking the child. When a little child as young as 5 goes through this, what do you think will become of this child when he becomes an adult? I'll let you answer that question. Now, the fifth consequence of child labor is emotional neglect. And this could come in form of deprivation of family love. And let's really look at it. A child who is working so hard in the fields, in the sun, doing a lot of things that he's not supposed to do. A child is supposed to be in school, is working under very unfavorable conditions with a very unfriendly employer. He feels he's deprived of his family love. Usually those children are lonely and they are helpless. We also have the sixth consequence, which is the physical neglect. And this is through inadequate food provision, clothing, shelter. The list is endless. Sometimes these children have to pay through their noses to eat, to feed themselves, to get a place to stay, because they work for as long as 20 hours every day. They sleep over at work. It's terrible for a young child to go through this. Now, the seventh consequence of child labor is lack of schooling. And when there is a lack of schooling, this causes educational qualification to be amiss. So when you don't go to school, the educational qualification you need that will guarantee a better life for you in the future, that will guarantee a good job, that will guarantee your ability to earn a living, is taken away from that child. What does that culminate in? That gives you poverty. In fact, it gives you abject poverty. That's what child labor does. It gives birth to abject poverty because the children don't go to school. Then, as a result of inability of children to negotiate, form trade unions and all of that, they don't pay them the right wages. They usually pay them lower wages and salaries. So when you try and compare the children workers to adult workers, you find out that children earn lower wages and salaries, which is usually not commensurate to the work they do, because they really work so hard, sometimes much more than their adult colleagues, but they earn so less. And because they don't have a voice, this wicked act continues. I would like to go on a long break now. I want you to think about all I've said. I'd like you to call into the program. I want us to talk, share our opinions on this culture and abusive situations that are intertwined, and let's see how we can make a difference in the world. I'll be right back. If you're joining us, you're welcome to Breakout with BD on the BBS Radio Station 1. It's great to have you back. I told you the show is live. You can call into the program. I've given you the lines you can call into through. And before we went on break, we were considering child labor. We'll be looking at the solutions to child labor. And basically, we have to look at the first one, which is creating awareness about it. Creating social awareness and activism is one way of getting our voices heard about the barbaric nature of child labor and stopping it, nipping it at the bud. The second thing we can do as a form of solution to child labor is to rehabilitate child laborers. We should create rehab centers for these child laborers because some of them have gone through very terrible, abusive situations. Many of them can't live normal lives anymore. Some of them have been scarred for life. So we need rehab centers for these children so that their life quality can be assured in the future. And then we'll look at legislation and proper enforcement of child labor laws. And we're going to look at these in two or three ways. And the first way we're going to be considering legislation and the proper enforcement of child labor laws is improving child labor laws and legislations. Basically, labor laws that should establish the minimum age for work and regulate working conditions usually operate within the confines of the formal sector. Now, many of the children that work in the auspices of child labor work in the informal sectors where the legal protection of the law does not extend. Also, some of these children work in cottage or small industries which are not covered by labor laws. And the reason basically is because some of these cottage or small industries employ less than 10 people. Now, the legislative arm of the government should extend labor laws to wherever you find laborers, whether it's a cottage industry, whether it's a small industry, whether it's a formal sector, whether it's an informal sector. The legislative arm of government should extend labor laws to wherever you find laborers. The reason is that the labor laws would be able to cover the main places where children work. Also, we need to ensure that the enforcement of child labors and laws are effective. If laws are not effective, how do you expect them to be enforced? This is something that every government should look into. The necessary bodies that should be in place to enforce these laws must be in place, must take their job seriously, and do something to ensure that whoever violates the child labor laws or child labor legislations is prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Now we're going to look at another way of combating child labor, and that is through increasing the quality, relevance, and access to education. What am I saying? Schooling for children must be compulsory because education ends child exploitation. You find out that children who are in schools are less likely to be in a hazardous or exploitative work environment. So when you send your children to schools, instead of sending them to work, it ends child exploitation. Another way education can stop child labor now is because the education system can be attractive and can retain children. So when the educational system is attractive and can retain children, it improves the quality and its relevance as well. Through this, children can break the cycle of poverty. So we are saying, give the children a good quality of education, empower them well, give them the needed knowledge, empower them with the needed skills and abilities to make it in life, and then you break the cycle of poverty. So every educational system must attract and retain children and improve its quality and relevance alongside. According to UNICEF, for every year of quality education given to children, their adult earning capacity increases by 10%. I think that's thumb up for those children who are going to school. It improves the quality of their lives in the future. Please send your children to school, and the government must do everything within its power to ensure that the schools give good and quality education. Also, Schools must be built in rural areas alongside the provision of quality educational facilities. Last week, I was talking about some kids in a rural area that complained that their schools had no roof, had no toilets, had no teachers. For God's sakes, if I'm going to build a school, let's build a school with quality educational facilities. Most times in developing nations, the government is unable and probably unwilling to do this. Also, we must promote adult education. When you increase adult literacy rate, you decrease child labor rates. In the long run, educated adults have fewer children and they are quick to educate their children. So we have effective family planning and better chances for kids to go to school. Now we have another thing that we can do to check child labor, and that's called vocational training. Now, this helps older children or older child laborers through training them and providing them with skills to make better decisions. Also, we must check for equality, or we must ensure equality for women and girls. Basically, what I'm trying to say here is, when there is commitment to the promotion of women equality rights, then the commitment to end child labor will also be ensured and will also become more effective. If a woman's income improves, so does the situation of her children. Women also need access to decent jobs and good child care. So they have money to take care of their needs in the home. They have a good healthcare system that can take care of the children, that can give them knowledge, that can equip them with the needed know-how on how to be excellent moms, the things to do to ensure that child mortality is nilled off. Now, women care and invest in their children's food, shelter, clothing, and schooling. The women struggle for recognition, decision-making, power, autonomy, equality with men, and so on, cannot be separated from the campaign End Child Labor. So when we are saying that we want equality for women, when we want the lives of women to improve, we are also saying that we want to end child labor. Because when the life of a woman becomes better, certainly the life of her children, the quality of the lives of her children becomes improved. Now it's time for us to now take the huge step here in checking child labor, and that's by replacing child laborers with adults. Because adults are better equipped to work, they have better skills, and apparently adults are better paid than children. Let's replace the child laborers with their parents who may be unemployed or older relatives. And please, for those of us who are consumers, this clarion call goes out to all of us. Do not wear a child's work. As consumers, we should contribute our quota to ending child labor. Let's keep our eyes open for labels stating that the product is not made by children. Sometimes the labels will tell us that this product is union made, or sometimes the labels have names like Rugmark or Fair Trade. Now, this label simply tells us that it's a guarantee that children were not involved in the production process. Well, so much for child labor today. I'm sure you have a lot of things going through your minds, the things you feel that you can do to contribute to end child labor today. Like I said, child labor is not only prevalent in Africa, it's everywhere. So when you notice it, please do something to check it. Talk about it, speak out, report it to the necessary authorities. Let's nip child labor in the bud. I told you last week that there's a segment of our show we call Angels on a Mission, and this is the most exciting part of the show. I love this part so much because here we celebrate people who invest their time, energy, and resources in improving the lives of other people. In essence, Angels on a Mission are simply people who are their brother's keeper, who make the world a better place for children, who make the world a safer place for children, who add quality to the lives of people around them. And for this week, we'll be celebrating our Angel on the Mission, which is an NGO, a non-governmental organization based in Nigeria called Radiance Foundation. Now, this NGO hosted an event on the 3rd of March and the 4th of March in 2011 aimed at national transformation. Their objective was to get the Nigerian youths refocused and redirected on their roles and responsibilities of becoming a tool of national transformation and also take up basic leadership skills. I must say, if you have a redirected and refocused youth, you will have a positively driven adult who is more responsible, patriotic, and reasonable. I believe this is one of the major steps in ensuring that the world is a safer place for children and for everyone. Well, for culture and abuse, it's a long, long road we're going to be taking together. I just took 3 points today, but there's a lot more we'll be talking about. We'll be looking at physical abuse, we're looking at neglect, we're checking out other cultures that encourages male dominance, alcoholism, and many, many things that our cultures say yes to, but that is actually promoting child abuse. Like I said, if you need a voice, you've got one. If you want to talk about anything that you feel is wrong and that is encouraging the prevalence of child abuse, and you like to share your stories, your concerns, your questions, please feel free to contact me. You can call into the program when I'm on live every Sunday, or you can send me your stories or comments or questions. You can send them to my mail. I'll be glad to read from you. And so far, so good. I think it's time for us to wrap up the show. I really enjoy the time we spent in enlightening ourselves. I want us to be good to one another, and I want you to remember that it's time for you and I to be the part of the change that is fair. It starts with our intention. I love you all. I'll see you next week. Don't forget, we'll still be talking about culture and abuse. We'll be looking at it more exhaustively. Thank you for joining me. Bye-bye.